Good evening, everybody. This is Susan, and we're Genealogy and Spirit Connect. This is going to be an interesting show because we're doing Tuesday show pre-recorded live tonight on Sunday. Now, if that doesn't confuse you, nothing will. But we've been confused all day, but we're going to take it anyway. It just so happened that when I moved the show from Monday nights to Tuesday days, I failed to remember that I had jury duty scheduled during the week this week. So here we go. We have a very interesting show, and we've had some really, really good interesting shows, and this one is destined to be another one. You know, when we get into genealogy, you know, I've always said that genealogy is really more than just dates, places, and names. And we've had some interesting shows on the spiritual level, and this particular show is really kind of geared to the genealogy side, but there's a lot of spirituality in it, and you'll see why. We're going to take a look at genealogy from a perspective of why. Why did our ancestors do some of the things that they did? And I have a very interesting guest. His name is Ron Ahrens, and he was actually born in New York, and he's been into genealogy for quite some time. And after serving as a marketer in many high-tech companies, he began to do his genealogy and really start to take a look and researching his criminal's ancestors' past. Now, we all have some skeletons in our closet. I know I do, too. And one of the things that I really want to share with you before we get into depth with Ron is how careful we need to be when posting this kind of information to our families. I know from my perspective, I have a situation that a couple of my family members are not really excited about, so I've kept it pretty much under wraps. But Ron has written a book, and it's a very interesting book. It's called The Jews of Sing Sing, and he's really taking it from exploring how some of the Jewish people, ended up in a very interesting place called the Sing Sing Correctional Facility. Ron, good evening, and welcome.
Hi, Susan. How are you?
I am doing great. And you?
I'm just fine, thanks.
Good. Well, how in the world did you get interested in this subject, may I ask?
Well, I didn't choose this topic. I have to seriously tell you that.
Okay.
I actually was shown a family tree by my father when I was in college, and I just wasn't ready at that time. I sort of said, that's great, Dad, but I really did not mean it. And many years later, about 20 years ago, when I lost both my mother and father to cancer, I had a very different perspective. I really felt like my entire nuclear family had collapsed and was down to nothing. And I really wanted to find out who I was and where I was from. So I located the family tree that my father had shown me in college, and I also found a box of postcards from the old country, which I found fascinating. They were in Russian, Cyrillic, and Yiddish script, and I had no idea what they said, but I figured this was something that was not replaceable. You could take a silver tea set and get another one. You could take China and get more China, but this was definitely unique, and I asked my brother if he wanted it. He said no. I said, fine, this is mine. I want to take it, and only later would I find out that the postcards really were quite boring after I had them translated, but I did not know that at the time. So that was on my father's side of the family. He quite honestly had the more staid, the quiet, pretty tame part of the family. So I started researching my mother's side of the family, and very, very early on in my research, I found discrepancies in information about my great-grandfather. In fact, the first three documents I found about him showed that he was born in three different locations, New York, Pennsylvania, well, the Pennsylvania would come later, New York, London, and elsewhere in England. I thought, this is just not right. Even Harry Houdini, who really did entertain the troops at Sing Sing, could not have been born in three different locations. So I thought, this really is something I really want to answer for myself. It really got under my skin. I wanted to find out, having been trained as an engineer, you go for an answer, and I could not give it up. So I went looking, and I ultimately found a 1900 U.S. Census record showing that some guy by the same name was born in Pennsylvania. So There weren't that many people in New York by the same name, and I thought, this can't be him because I was raised a goody two-shoes. It can't be my family. But then again, it stood to reason that it very well could be him because I already had three documents showing that he was born in three different locations, so this would have been a fourth location. So the census record showed that this person was behind bars at Sing Sing, and I said, hmm. So I actually called up the prison and said, do you have the records? They said, no, we don't have the records, but you may want to contact the New York State Archives in Albany. They have the records. I called up Albany. They said, we do have the records. I said, can you look up something for me? And they said, no, we can't. You have to tell us when the person was admitted. I said, I really don't know that. All I know is the person was behind bars in 1900. And the guy said, well, we have all the original admissions records to Sing Sing. If you want to come to New York, get them out. I said, get them out. I'm coming to New York.
Wow. So the records are not really that readily available there. You have to physically go there if that's what you want to do.
Well, they weren't really indexed in any special way, and I really did not know when my great-grandfather was admitted. And if I can inject some spiritual component now.
Sure.
There really was a calling. I heard a voice that either said, come to New York or go to New York because there's something that you must find there. And I went. And I gave myself one day to answer the question whether or not this was truly my great-grandfather behind bars. The person told me that there were about 200 to 300 inmates admitted every year, and between my grandfather's birthday in 1895 and 1900, when I found someone by the same name behind bars as my great-grandfather, that was 5 years, 5 times 300 is 1,500 records. Divide that by 8 hours that the archives was open in one day. Divide that by 60 minutes per hour. I figured I'd have to go through 2.5 records per minute for the whole day to go through the entire 1,500 records. And I said, I can do that. So really, truly, in the first hour, I came across the record. That was the record for my great-grandfather, and it was a very interesting experience. I just sort of sat back and had a swirl and curious mixture of a variety of different emotions. I laughed. I was shocked, horrified. I really didn't know what to do with myself, so I immediately called my brother, and he and I did have a good laugh. I next called my aunt in New York, and she did not have the exact same reaction. She was sort of taken aback at this news.
Did she not know?
She did not know. I would ultimately find out that my mother did know, but that would take years to find out. But it's something my mother knew, never told her children, but my aunt did not know. My aunt and my mother were 10 years apart, so some things my mother knew that my aunt did not know.
I understand. You know, it's very interesting because I had a similar situation, and it's really interesting. Once you decide that you are going after a certain piece of information, not really knowing what you're going to find, and I went through the same thing. I mean, when I got to the courthouse to look something up, I mean, it was the first record I came across. I mean, I spent less than a minute. And it was a hunch. I mean, mine was a hunch. There was something wrong with the stories that my family had been telling me. And, you know, there was a discrepancy in movement of people. So it's really very interesting, you know, that there's a reason, and we don't always know what it is, that we are called to go do something at a particular time. Now, yeah, I was reading a little bit about this Sing Sing Correctional Facility. It's quite a maximum facility from what I understand.
It's been around for 120 years. It was actually built by inmates at Auburn Prison, which is even older and still in existence. And both, for all their tenure, have been maximum security prisons. It's not a place to be taken lightly. It's not a place you want to go there.
Did you actually go in and look at some of the cell blocks and stuff, or were you not allowed to do that?
I was actually allowed. I was given access for a three-hour private tour, which is not something most people can do. You can pay to go on a boat to Alcatraz Island here in San Francisco, but Sing Sing is a fully functioning maximum security prison with some people you really don't want to run into, and they really try to keep most people out. It's hard to escape the place, but it's also very difficult to get into the place.
Now,
go ahead.
My understanding is it's mostly people out of New York and New York City and New York State that are put there. Is that correct?
Mostly the New York City area. 90% of the people who are in Sing Sing are from the five boroughs. So it's an entry point into the rest of the prison system, but vast majority of the felons there are from the New York City area.
And, you know, even Wikipedia had a pretty interesting list of some of the people who were notable prisoners there. Pretty amazing.
A very historic place. That, Alcatraz and Leavenworth are the three big-name prisons in the country.
So, going back to what you found, you want to share exactly what you found? Or?
Well, I'd love people to buy my book. I'll throw this out as a teaser that my great-grandfather either loved or hated women, depending on your perspective. And I think that's enough of a clue, but if you can't figure it out, you can buy the book, and the answer will be there. But he loved or hated women, and he spent 4 years behind Sing Sing because he loved or hated women.
Okay.
We'll leave it at that.
Now, your book, called The Jews of Sing Sing, you obviously talk about some of the other inmates there.
I did. And the reason for that is that I wrote a manuscript about my great-grandfather and his father, who I found out was a rabbi who was born in Poland, who also got into trouble himself, but in England. And I shot the manuscript around, and the publishing world basically said, we really do not need another memoir. So thinking out of the box one day, or maybe I was inebriated, I can't remember which, I just said, I'll show you, publishing world, I'm going to write a book about every Jew in Sing Sing. And I really did not know what I was talking about at the time, but I did do some early research to try to confirm for myself that this was a good idea to follow up on. So I actually looked at various federal and state census records for the prison, and it was very obvious to me that there were hundreds of Jewish criminals behind bars at Sing Sing.
Yes, and what kind of – and because it's maximum security, I mean, the crimes had to be pretty, I guess, up there – I guess in the, you know, criminal, you know.
Well, you wouldn't go there for pickpocketing, and there were a complete range of different crimes that people were in for. People are clearly in for homicide, people in for robbery, burglary, grand larceny, but people were in for arson, for abortion, for prostitution, for all sorts of things. So maybe some things we would consider today as lesser crimes, but people back in those days were sent to Sing Sing probably because of the proximity to New York City and the fact that there were not as many correctional facilities in New York State as there are now. Now there are a total of 60 across the state system. Back then there were only three.
Now, I think some of the Rosenbergs, Julius and Ethel, who were the spies, I think, back in the 50s. They were executed there, and it seems that that execution, electric chair is probably one that has gone down in infamy, too.
It's a very special chair. It has a couple of nicknames as well, Old Sparky, Old Smoky, because when people were electrocuted, there would be smoke coming out of the body, and it would actually go through a hole in the roof of the building, known as the Death House. So there were a total of 614 electrocutions in the chair at Sing Sing. So it is a quite notorious chair. And there were many, many Jewish criminals who served their final time in the chair. So I actually had the opportunity to count them, as morbid as that may sound, but there's a special admissions book for those people who are on death row.
So, you know, going back to the why, you know, when we start to find out these kinds of things about our ancestors, our relatives, and, you know, when we find out that you know, some of our relatives do not want to talk about it, we find our relatives don't really know the story. And, you know, when you have a skeleton in the closet like that, you know, how's the best way to deal with it?
the best way would be to find someone who is willing to talk about it. In my case, I really didn't have any such relative to talk to. My aunt did not know anything about it. I had a cousin near me in Northern California who would never say a nasty thing about anyone, and he only had the nicest things to say about my great-grandfather. So as much as I love my cousin, he was no use to me in terms of this project. So in my case, I really just had to go digging for records, and I went digging, and I found as much as I could and basically pieced together my great-grandfather's life from the very beginning all the way to the end of his life, and I found that he got into trouble two more times, and that's in the book too. So,
he didn't learn.
No, he did not learn. He continued to break the rules, and he had a sense of humor about it.
So, this was your mother's...
My mother's father's father.
Your mother's father's father. So, did your mother just not talk about it? Did your mother, did your grandfather not talk about it? I mean, was it just a kind of a hush-hush, or...
Go ahead.
And I guess the other side of this question is what was the spark that said these things don't really match, other than the fact that he was born in three different places, that really, really made you start to think that there was another story here that you wanted to search out?
One of the reasons why I got on the plane to go to New York to research the prison records was that I remember the story from my childhood that one day in my grandparents' house, I teased my grandmother that should I be a bad boy that day, she would have to throw me away in Sing Sing. And I can't remember why I said that, but she pulled me aside, and I remember the story as if it happened yesterday, and she said in the most stern words, don't you dare use the word Sing Sing in front of your grandfather. That will really annoy him. And I thought to myself, thinking, there must have been a good reason why Grandma said that, and that was all the more reason why I got on that plane to New York to check this out. So not only did I hear a voice saying, go or come to New York, there's something for you to find, I really had a tangible story that I could relate to from my childhood that gave me much more reason to think this was the reality rather than just a possibility.
So when you made that, I mean, you first found the record of him being imprisoned in Sing Sing.
That was in the census record.
That was really the first thing.
Right.
So, I mean, you really kind of knew at that point early on that that's where he had ended up. I'm sure that the story with your grandmother had pretty much made an instantaneous connection there.
I wasn't really sure. I couldn't remember whether I saw some old criminal movie that showed Sing Sing. I can't remember why I even used the term, but I probably heard it in my grandparents' house, and somehow it popped out of my mouth when I spoke to my grandmother that day.
Interesting. So you only ended up with, you only had one relative that was in trouble.
I actually had other relatives in trouble. My great-grandmother, who's married to this criminal, had a sister. And I was told that she was a famous Yiddish stage actress. And I found this very hard to believe. But someone told me that the New York Public Library at Lincoln Center has great files on people in show business. So I went there. And while I did not find the file on her, I did find a file on her husband, who was a Yiddish actor. And among the pieces of paper in his file was an article from Variety magazine circa 1914, 1916, saying that he was fooling around on the side and that my great-grand aunt found him fooling around on the side and she complained. The next week's issue of Variety magazine, he comes back and he says, well, I'm on the road, and quote-unquote, I'm only human. What do you expect? So now potentially I had a great-grandmother and a great-aunt who both had creeps for husbands.
Whew. Interesting. And the fact, too, and I mean, you know, I guess being in New York, and because in New York the Jewish population is huge, it's not something that we normally think that we see within the Jewish population on the whole.
I mean, You're talking about criminals.
That's correct. We see a few, didn't we? Yeah, we've had a few recently, actually.
Just a few.
Have caught the world by storm lately.
By imagination, yes.
Yes.
So when I actually talk to crowds, I ask people, how many people do you think were in Sing Sing between, let's say, 1880 and 1950, a 70-year period? And the most common answer I get is around 250 people. Well, the numbers were actually substantially higher than that. I actually counted them. I actually went through 70 years worth of admissions records, which are at the New York State Archives, and every time I saw an admissions record where the inmate claimed to be Jewish upon admission, I got out of my chair and took a photograph. This took me 5 solid weeks. It was literally backbreaking work. My back really hurt getting in and out of that chair for 5 solid weeks, and I came away with more than 7,000 photographs. So even discounting for recidivism, people who go back for more fun at the prison, I still came up with more than 6,000 individual Jewish criminals.
Amazing. And why do you think they kept going back for more?
I think these were either they really couldn't find a job, or they were really pathetically stupid. They were incompetent criminals, or they were stupid, or they loved it there. I'm not quite sure which. But they were... About 5 of every 6 only served one term, but one person actually served 7 different terms. He must have loved it a lot. He kept going back for more.
Unbelievable. I mean, it is kind of unbelievable. Now, the time period that we're discussing now is what?
What I counted was between 1880 and 1950, but there are records before 1880 and there are records after. The bulk of the population of inmates that were Jewish was in this time frame. So there were diminishing returns of my spending a lot of time with the other records.
Now, when you go and present, and I know that you go around the country presenting on this topic, besides them people not really getting a concept of what the numbers would be, what would you think is the most surprising thing that they learn?
I'm trying to deal with history as I saw it. And it surprises people that the numbers are so high. Well, some people actually complain. I had a woman in Detroit just get up and exclaim, this is basically heresy. This can't be true. So I actually had a couple of friends in the audience back me up. They got out of their chair and said, yes, this is what Ron says, and it's true. So sometimes it shocks people, but... I think what I am creating in my talks is an open, honest environment to talk about it. So maybe I'm preaching to the choir, singing to the choir, but invariably there are people in the audience who, too, had, as you said at the top of the show, had black sheep in their family. In my case, there are lots of people in the audience who had relatives who were in Sing Sing. So there's a big, I want to call it alumni club, but it's a club of descendants of fellow Jewish Sing Sing inmates, and there are a lot of us, and one would have to expect that if there were 6,000 individuals who were in Sing Sing who were Jewish, multiply that over the generations, there have to be tens if not hundreds of thousands of us descendants out there. So it stands to reason that I would run into a whole bunch more descendants of Jewish Sing Sing inmates, and I have. I've met quite a few. And I think what is great about my talks is that people see that I'm open enough to talk about it, and they feel more comfortable talking about it too. And I think they find it's okay to do so.
It is, and you know, I think that the more everybody, you know, we're all open about things, the more we can better understand and forgive. I mean, you know, people do things based on a situation that they're involved in at a particular time in their life or stage in their life, and you know, whether you know it's bad, I mean, it's not a good thing, and you know that we do have to, you know, not forgive the action but forgive them for you know, being who they are. I mean, sometimes they can't help it. And there are reasons, they're just reasons why, you know, they do some of the things that they do. And it's not just criminal, it's all kinds of things. I mean, it's passing on false stories to people that ruins their lives. I mean, it just totally ruins their lives. And I've seen that time and time and time again. And the other thing that I am curious about is those people that are starting to open up about it, you know, what have they said about their experiences with their family members? And, you know, are their family members willing to open up and talk about it?
It varies. I did actually interview some descendants of criminals I wrote about in the book, and some were more open about it than others. And some actually were very happy to hear from me. So it was actually a lot of fun to communicate with two people in particular. One was the grandson of a criminal named Dopey Benny Fine, and he told me that he learned more from me than he learned from hearing through his family, even though in his family they talked about it quite openly. But he and I collaborated on the chapter about his grandfather, Dopey Benny Fine, and we had a lot of fun together. Same time I met a great niece of another character in my book, and she had heard stories about her great uncle, but she knew him very differently. She thought of him as a big teddy bear, and he bought her dresses, and she couldn't reconcile that with the stories that she heard, that he was a Flander, that he was a criminal on this front. And it didn't jive. But once I showed her pictures and stories from books that I saw and FBI records, then it really hit it home for her, and she shared stuff with me that I didn't know about from all the documents I collected about that particular criminal. So it was very heartwarming on both sides for us to work together, and we learned together. It was a fun project.
Sounds like it. I want to give out a number, and these are for people who are listening tonight on Sunday and not on Tuesday, when the show is going to be played at its regular time. If anybody has any questions for Ron, the toll-free number is 888-228-4494, and that is for tonight, Sunday only. Please feel free to call in if you have any questions or any concerns, or you know, if you actually have heard some interesting stories about your family. You know, the thing that you know, when we're researching our families and through the you know, genealogy researches, it's always when the stories don't jive when you start to really think the worst. And from what I can tell, is normally we're pretty much right on. You know, it's an intuitive thing that you get honed in on when you start to have these stories that just don't quite fit. And I'm gonna share a little bit of my story because it's kind of the same type of thing. And I won't share who it was, but there was a period of time when this family left in the middle of the night, the story that I was told, and they went from Chicago to California, and they spent some time there, and then ended up in New Orleans. And it just seemed like a very strange situation that they would steal out in the middle of the night. But, you know, my family member, who, you know, was very close to me, never understood, never knew why. And, you know, it really, really, you know, came to a head, and I happened to be up in Chicago, and I decided, yeah, there's something more to the story. And I knew the year, and I said, I bet if I go into the courthouse records, I'm going to find something. And indeed, I did. And like I said at the beginning of the show, too, I found it like within a minute, very similar to you thinking you're going to take hours and hours to find it, and it just showed up on your doorstep in a few hours. So Usually when you have a hunch about these things, even if you are not told directly, it's pretty common that you intuitively will figure it out. And what was interesting, it wasn't a terrible thing. He obviously did spend some time in jail, about a year. But, you know, when you look back at the times, it was, you know, people were struggling. And, you know, sometimes you do some things. I have a feeling we're going to see a lot of things happening, too, in the next few years as people... with the economic situation the way it is, and people who wouldn't normally do something might indeed do something that they shouldn't. Now, going back to, you talked a little bit about how you were overwhelmed at the beginning when you first, you know, found out some of this stuff. Yeah, let's, can you verbalize a little bit more how that affected you? Or, I mean, did it, do you feel like it really affected you pretty much for the rest of your life?
A couple things happened, Susan. One was that I really thought of myself as a goody two-shoes, and now here I have information that through the generations I have one-eighth of my body is criminal blood. So that was sort of mind-bending, because I always thought of myself as a goody two-shoes. The other thing was that I went to the first IHHS conference that I had gone to in London, and I was never a comfortable speaker in front of a large crowd. I'd done marketing sales for high-tech companies and was comfortable with a crowd of up to about 10, but I never wished to be in front of a much larger crowd. But I wanted to tell the story, and I got up in front of 90 people in London, and 2 minutes into this presentation, people were laughing at the story. They were falling out of their chairs, and I said to myself, Ron, you have an effect on people, and this is actually fun. And over the course of the conference, so many people, about a dozen people, came up to me completely in an unsolicited fashion, said how much they enjoyed my presentation. And I was overwhelmed. I just was overwhelmed. A couple people came up to me, and they said, you have to repeat this back in the States. I did. And I started talking to large crowds in the States, and I became and have become a much better speaker. But this was something I never expected would have come of out of this research. So this has been truly transformational. And there are other stories that I talk about in the book. I will not tell them here because they'll give away a lot of the stories that I want to keep private in the book. But I truly call this extended psychotherapy. There were other things that happened in my grandparents' house that can only be explained by my great-grandfather's behavior. And my great-grandfather died 9 years before I was born, but still, there's only one logical explanation for things that happened in my grandparents' house that I witnessed over and over and over again. They can only be explained by my great-grandfather. So this was life-changing on a number of different levels.
Now, going back to the closer relatives, the ones who were, you know, living during the same time, would you say that they had any, that this had a major effect on them, or could you really go back when you started really looking at the dynamics of the families and how they lived their life, if you could see if there was any connection to what you found to, you know, sadness in their life or problems that they had during their life, whether it was, yeah, it doesn't have to be criminal, but
the most obvious example is my grandfather, who was always a clown before his grandchildren. I just did not understand why. He would go into the closet and pull out any one of 100 different hats, and he would put on a show for his grandchildren. And we all thought it was hysterically funny, but he was really a sad man. He had a very troubled childhood. He lived with other relatives when his father was behind bars. He had a very sad childhood, and I didn't really understand this until I did this research. So now it all makes sense, but he was a clown for a good reason. He was very sad, and he wanted to put on a good show. That's the best example.
So basically this thing with his father pretty much affected him his whole life.
Very much.
And So do you know if he talked about it at all, or was it a very secret type of thing?
As I said, there's a set of stories in the book that I will not tell here because I'll give away a lot of the stuff I want to have people buy the book for. But there are other stories that clearly repeated themselves, and there were hints. If I knew what was going on, if I knew that my great-grandfather in story, I would have understood at the time what he was talking about. He spoke cryptically, but now it all sort of makes sense and all ties back to my great-grandfather.
And all of this is covered in the book.
It certainly is.
Okay. And the book is called The Jews of Sing Sing. And if you go to my website, www.susaneking.com, and you go to the radio show guest, there is a link to Ron's book. It's if you have any ties to ancestors who have had some shady past, I can tell you that it would be a very interesting read. And I can also say, too, that the more and more that we study our families, and more we study and go back and we find out some of these secrets that we might have in our families. And I guess they call them skeletons in the closet for a reason, huh?
They do. And can I add one more thing? On my website,
sure.
Susan, I actually have a database of these 6,000 inmates. So should there be someone out there in Radioland who thinks they had a Jewish ancestor in Sing Sing, they can actually type in the last name of that person and find out whether or not that he is in my database. And if so, I have the admissions record for that person.
Oh, well, then
they can contact
me. I think you need to give out the website address.
I guess I have to. The easiest way to remember it is www.jewsofsingsing.com. All one word, www.jewsofsingsing.com. So I have pictures of some of the famous criminals who served time there. I have pictures of my tour of Sing Sing. So if you've never been inside of Sing Sing, and most of you haven't, you can actually take a virtual tour of the inside of the prison, because I was allowed to take pictures inside the prison so long as I didn't have any inmates or correctional officers in the pictures. So that was a treat.
So tell me a little bit about what you really saw.
Inside the prison?
Yeah, I mean, I can go look at the pictures, but, you know, just what stood out the most for you?
A couple of things happened on my tour. One was to go in the various different cell blocks. I was invited to go through cell block A, which I'm told is the longest cell block in the country. It is 4 stories high and 175 yards long, filled with a whole bunch of wires and fences, and it's just not a lovely place to be. It's just pretty depressing. The other thing that happened is that after two misses going by the Jewish chapel and finding that the door was locked, virtually at the end of the tour, the correctional officer who was by my side for 3 hours, and I walked by the Jewish chapel, and lo and behold, it was open, and lo and behold, there were 5 inmates inside celebrating the Jewish holiday of Sukkot. And we walked in, and the correctional officer introduced me as someone who's a descendant of a Jewish criminal in Sing Sing, and they invited me to participate in this Jewish holiday service, which was truly wild. So I had not planned on actually interacting with any inmates, but they invited me to deal with them. And the more bizarre thing was that just the day before, I was in Boston visiting a friend of mine who was doing a documentary film on currently incarcerated Jewish inmates, and in particular at that time at Sing Sing. So I actually had seen video footage of 2 of the inmates I was right next to in this chapel in Sing Sing. So I knew them by name, but I really couldn't even say hi by name, because then the correctional officer and the inmate would look at me like, how did you know my name was this?
Right.
So I really had to keep my mouth shut, but the leader of the group was someone I knew by name, and he invited me to participate in the service. So I read from the Jewish prayer book, and I took the holiday offerings, the lulav and the etrog, which I was instructed to shake north, south, east, west, up and down, and I did a lot of shaking, doing the shaking of the lulav and the etrog. And only later when I got home did I understand the total symbolism of my participating in this particular service. Now, a little of an etrog. The etrog looks like a lemon. The etrog is a long leaf. It's actually three different things combined together. And one of them represents the good, one of them represents the bad. And here I am, Goody Two Shoes, mixing with the no good nicks behind bars at Sing Sing. So it's really a sort of surreal experience that Goody Two Shoes and no good nicks are shaking the good and the bad together during the holiday of Sukkot. It was a wild, wild, wild event during and after.
I can imagine that would be kind of an eye opener.
But I felt compelled to do my duty and share the experience with them, and I did.
Well, I'm sure that they probably welcomed it just to have someone from the outside world participate.
I think they really enjoyed it.
So outside of that, what else was memorable for you?
Well, going inside the death house, as it was called, I went upstairs to the second floor of this two-story building where Ethel spent her remaining days before she was put in the chair, and they showed me the table that she wrote her last letter to her two sons. That was very interesting. I walked down what was called the last mile, which is the very last steps the inmates take before they were put in the electric chair. So that was a little harrowing to know that and see the lever that was pulled to turn on the juice. So that was pretty intense.
Now, do they still do that there?
No. I think New York State eliminated the electric chair in the late 1950s.
Right.
So it hasn't been used for many years, but it was used 614 times, as I said before that. It's a pretty crazy place. The other wild thing is that there's a strong relationship between Hollywood and Sing Sing. And in fact, there's a building on site, which is now currently used as a gymnasium, but it was originally built as a set by and for Warner Brothers. And the Warner Brothers themselves were Jews who attended Temple Emmanuel on Fifth Avenue in New York. So there's a strong connection between Jews and Sing Sing, whether you're on the Hollywood side or on the criminal side. But there's a strong connection between Hollywood and many movies and Sing Sing, and including one cartoon, which includes my alter ego, Bugs Bunny, from a cartoon 1948 called Big House Bunny. Big House is slang for a big-name prison like Alcatraz or Sing Sing. And Bugs Bunny is an inmate in a prison in the cartoon called Sing Song Prison. In typical Warner Brothers fashion, they twist everything just a little bit, but it's pretty close to reality. And if you look closely at the buildings in the cartoon, they look just like the buildings at Sing Sing.
That is funny. Now, I mean, did you just find this cartoon or get a copy of it recently? Or
I have had a copy, and I love Warner Brothers cartoons, and I have to come across this one. I said, oh, my goodness, and I started looking at it basically frame by frame, and it just cracked me up. It's very, very funny.
Now, where exactly is Sing Sing located?
Sing Sing is literally up the river. When they sent you up the river, they meant it. Sing Sing is in the town now known as Ossining, but the town used to be called Sing Sing, 30 miles north of Manhattan, and they would take inmates by boat, by train, by car, up the river to Sing Sing, which is right on the river. Just like Alcatraz, they both have beautiful views of the water. It's prime territory.
I actually do have a picture that I'm looking at it from the water, and it is actually does look quite pretty.
Actually,
lit up.
Most people don't know. If you take the Metro North Railroad from New York all the way up to Albany, you actually pass under and through the prison. So every day that train goes back and forth quite a number of times, but you're actually going under and through the prison.
Now, what do you mean by that?
The campus is actually two different pieces separated by the railroad tracks. So the older section is closer to the river. The newer section is on the east side of the tracks going up the hill. So there are two pieces of the big campus, which is 550 acres. It's a huge campus, and it's bisected by the Metro North Railroad tracks. And the Metro North Railroad goes up and down and back and forth on those tracks every day with commuters. Most of them probably don't know that they're passing right through Sing Sing every day.
I bet they don't. I wouldn't have known that. Now, so there's a new section and an old section.
Right.
And is the old section still functioning, or is it...
pieces are. The death house is there, but that's not really used for anything. The original cell block, where presumably my great-grandfather's her time, is still there. The roof burned off about 30 years ago, but the marble walls are quite sturdy. They're about a foot thick, and they're not moving anytime soon unless they truly intend on dismantling that structure. There are workshops where people learn different trades. There is a law library on that side of the tracks. There is a baseball field there. There are other workout facilities on that side of the track. So there's a lot that's truly functional. And then most of the cell blocks themselves are on the newer part of the campus, as well as the various chapels. So there's a lot going on there.
It sounds like it. So they, how many inmates do they currently serve in today's world?
I think about 1,700, which is down from a high of about 2,500. It's a very large facility.
Now, in the Wikipedia, it says that they actually do have a cemetery there, too.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
Most of the criminals I'm aware of are actually buried somewhere in Queens or Brooklyn. So my great-grandfather is buried in Mount Hebron Cemetery, along with the likes of Louis Lepke Buckhalter, who was one of the worst, and Louis Buckhalter died in an electric chair. So there are a number of people who died in an electric chair who were in various cemeteries in New York. I didn't know that there was a cemetery on site.
That's what it says. But so when you say he's buried, I mean, were people who did your great grandfather, right?
Yes.
Did he die in prison or no?
Absolutely not. No, he died married to not my great grandmother, but someone else. He's in Mount Hebron Cemetery. He lived. He only had 4 years in Sing Sing. He didn't go back, and despite the fact that he did commit other crimes, he was never convicted of the other crimes, as far as I know.
So there wasn't a special section of the cemetery for criminals then. They were just people were just buried there based on.
That's news to me. I really don't know. There, I know people, other Jewish criminals who died in Sing Sing, but as far as I know, they are buried elsewhere as well. This is the first I've really heard about a cemetery in a prison, but maybe I shouldn't be surprised.
Well, I mean, it just says, this is Wikipedia, you can look it up. It says Sing Sing has its own ancient cemetery. Hmm. Among those buried there is serial killer Albert Fish.
Ah, I've actually heard that name, but I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I learn something every day.
There you go. Well, I mean, I've heard the name Sing Sing before. I mean, I don't think I've ever paid a whole lot of attention to it personally.
It actually comes from the Native American term stone upon stone, and the original cell block was built with marble from a quarry just around the corner from the site of the prison.
So it's built out of marble?
Yeah, well, the original cell block is pure marble. It is very sturdy. The original cell block is just not going away anytime soon.
So I guess it's kind of got a chill to the air or something.
Yeah.
Very cold.
Yeah, and it was cold in those days. They did not have heating, so you were pretty cold in the cell blocks. The conditions were pretty horrible. One of the things that struck me, talking about spirituality, is that I went looking for books about the prison. And I came across this book that was written, came out in early 1900s, either 1902 or 1904, written by inmate number 1500. Now, it would have been truly wild if inmate number 1500 happened to have been my great-grandfather, which it was not. But inmate number 1500 was behind bars at exactly the same time as my great-grandfather. And this inmate wrote about the excruciating conditions that they lived under. It was not fun. As horrible as it might be to be there today, it was even worse 100 years ago. It was not comfortable by any means.
And then you say that people went back. Seven times.
I don't know why.
That's very interesting. So now that you've, done this work and you've got your genealogy done, how do you portray this in your genealogical work?
I think what I really want to do is to encourage other people to do the same thing. And I think through the book, I've proven to myself, and I want to show others that it can be done over and over again. So what I think I've done is to concentrate on one individual at a time, collecting as much as I can about that one individual, whether it's documents directly about that person or documents about siblings or their parents or their children, the environment they lived in, events around that time frame where and when they lived. And by doing so, I pieced together that person's life. And that's what I've done in this book. I've done this about a dozen times with various different Jewish criminals, and I think it can be done by a lot of people. I have to admit, I was insanely lucky to find as much as I did about both my great-grandfather and his father, but I think other people can do this with one or more of their ancestors as well. And the really bizarre thing that came out of all this is that the unexpected benefit of using this approach of concentrating on one person as so intently as I did was that I found so much other family, and I really expanded my family tree back 4 or 5 more generations. I found living cousins I never knew existed, and I even found 2 equally obsessive genealogists on this particular side of the family who've been working on other things but really didn't know that much about my part of this family, and we've all joined forces, and that's been wonderful. So now I'm being invited to all sorts of events, weddings, bar mitzvahs. I don't even know who I'm being invited to listen to or see. Now, it's even more of an expensive hobby than I even planned on. I thought it was expensive just collecting the documents. But now I have to go to family events. It's even more of an expensive hobby. So don't ask for something. You just might get it, is my motto these days.
Well, I guess you had never thought, just doing your research, that it would come full circle to something like this, where you've written a book and you're touring and you're, doing presentations. And, yeah, totally different than being a high-tech marketer, I would suspect.
In my wildest imagination, I never expected to be doing this.
So, last week we were talking with Helen Radke, who is about honoring your ancestors. And basically what you're doing, and I think that it's something that people need to consider, is even though he was a criminal, you are basically honoring the life of your ancestor. And I think that that's very important. I think that it's a healing process of being able to get the information out, and deal with it either individually or as a family, to be able to heal yourself and heal the future generations. I think it's, we've been talking about this, I think, throughout the 6-week period that I've started doing these shows, about how, I think my last story at the Examiner, which is at www.examiner.com, talked about, our ancestors are in our bones. And, by healing and confronting these kinds of things, that it really is part of the healing process for ourselves and other members of our family. And I guess my question to you is, have you noticed that?
There's no doubt in my mind this was healing. And I did go see a psychotherapist after I lost both of my parents to cancer. I was very much in a deep depression. And this was the way I found myself out of it. And I've done a lot of healing, and I'm just a different person today. And it's been just a wonderful journey, and I can only wish that other people are lucky enough to go through the same experience.
And, it's very interesting, Ron, too, because, I've always said that doing family research and genealogy, and people, some people just think that those of us who are into this field are mad. I mean, mad.
Well, I admit it, Susan. I admit it.
I don't. I just found the whole thing to be a journey, a spiritual journey. And I just, every time I unearth a new family member, and I'm not saying that from the physical standpoint, and that was not a pun, as I find another member of my family, and you know, I dig deep, and you know, I want to know, you know, as much as I can about who they were and why they were who they were. And we, you know, this is part of, you know, the whole thing that you've done, because it really helps me and you and whoever is into doing this really helps you understand more about who you are. You know, one of my other sayings I have where genealogy and spirit connect, because I really am very, very in tune to that, is, you know, find your family, find yourself.
I totally agree, Susan, and possibly I have my great-grandfather's sense of humor. He had a pretty wild sense of humor, and I think of myself as having one too, and I think very largely from him. So I thank him, despite his foibles and his transgressions. There's definitely a part of him in me.
And it also, too, shows that there's always some good in everybody, no matter, even if, you know, they have some bad bad things. And I really believe that sometimes there are just situations that, you know, that force people to do things that they wouldn't normally do, because of either the times or the socioeconomic or political you know, structures that are going on. I mean, you know, we you know, we're talking, you know, back in you know, a little bit about the Jewish faith, and yeah, there are some situations that I've unearthed and worked with people who, you know, had some relatives who were probably on the wrong side of the fence as far as the Holocaust was concerned, and dealing with that personally, in knowing that perhaps a family member of theirs was instrumental in, you know, I guess, you know, being blunt, murdering Jews throughout Europe and Eastern Europe. And yeah, that's a hard nut to crack too. Mm-hmm. From a spiritual and a emotional point of view. And, you know, I mean, I've had lots and lots of people contact me over the years about, you know, how terrible they feel. And it's, you know, it's something that you have to, you know, obviously, they have to forgive themselves because it wasn't anything that they did. But in essence, I mean, you know, again, we carry our ancestors in our bones, and if somebody did something really bad, then we carry that, and especially if it was a horrific crimes like we saw during the Second World War. But in any event, anything else you want to add, Ron? Because I think we are coming up to the end of our hour.
I just invite people to explore their ancestors in greater detail, because you just don't know the unexpected finds you'll receive.
Isn't that the truth? That it really is. It's a surprise a minute sometimes when you start digging in. You know, you really don't know what you're going to find out, and it's being an investigator of sorts, except that you're investigating, you know, through the use of old records instead of current records. And that to me is really the big difference.
My phone's going off now.
Oh. In any event, Ron, I thank you very much. And again, this book is The Jews of Sing Sing. And you've been listening to Where Genealogy and Spirit Connect. I'm Susan King. And this is just a reminder, too, that this show live is basically a pre-record for the show on Tuesday, and we hope to see you again next week. We have an interesting guest too. Her name is Pamela Lorscher, and she is a medium, and she's involved in quite an interesting program, and I think that if you go to my website, you can read more about what she is doing. And I'm looking forward to having her. She'll be available to do some readings. And it should be an interesting show. Again, Susan King. My website is www.susaneking.com. Ron's website is www.jewsofsingsing.com.
www.jewsofsingsing.com. That's correct.
There you go.
Thank you so much for having me on the show tonight.
You're welcome, and thank you for coming. And we'll see everybody a week from Tuesday.